I could very well imagine that this will be one of the drivers during this year when the Chinese start stimulating and printing new currency, that gold will not only sniff this out, but also will be driven by that. But of course, you also have a lot of geopolitical problems in the world.
Florian, how's it going?
It's good here. Thank you for having me, Andy. Pleasure.
Thanks for coming on. You have an interesting perspective on things, not only with the technical aspects, but also international. And I want to talk a little bit about that. One of the papers that you wrote previously, you talked about the shipping lanes and how that being shut down, or even just currently how it's impacting inflation. Can we talk a little bit more about that?
Sure. Well, I mean, the most recent event obviously was in early October when Hamas invaded Israel, and then in reaction, Israel went into the Gaza Strip, and this is still going on. And you have a few thousand kilometers away in Yemen, a group, the Houthi rebels, that support basically the people in Gaza, and they started attacking the ships in the Red Sea, which is actually a very important traffic route for most of the cargo shipping from Asia to the West, especially, of course, to Rotterdam and in Europe, but also to America then from there. And now with these attacks on those ships, and this is going on already for a few weeks, most of those ships and logistic companies had to basically change their route. And now they're going via the Cape of Good Hope in Africa, which takes significantly longer, I think up to 40% longer in total. So the ship goes from Asia to Europe and then goes back over the Cape of the Good Horn, the Horn of the Good Hope. And obviously this creates delays in the supply chain, and it makes insurance more expensive. It makes the transport itself more expensive. And for example, Tesla had to stop their production in Berlin end of January, because they're just missing parts. And this is something similar that we've seen during the COVID crisis, when the world was faced with massive supply chain issues. And that obviously was one of the big driver behind inflation going up. And it looks like this whole thing could contribute maybe between 0.5% and 1% in terms of inflation numbers during the course of the year. Of course, things could also calm down rather quickly. It doesn't look like it. It could also intensify and escalate further. That's definitely, once again, telling us like how much our just-in-time world basically is depending on a few small routes like the Suez Canal in Egypt, where ships cannot go anymore because it's just too dangerous due to the Houthi rebels in the Red Sea.
What's interesting to me is how this is matching up with like the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve was very aggressive, and really all central banks were very aggressive the last 12 to 24 months. And then the Fed went dovish in December, and now you have an election year coming up. So how does this work then? It seems to me like the Fed is in a box, if you would. It's like almost a checkmate. Okay, you have an election year coming up, which they tend to be dovish. You said they're going to be dovish, yet you still have inflationary pressures because of shipping or higher energy prices or whatever have you. Right. What's your comment on that?
Yes, I think one important aspect, or at least my perspective on this whole thing, is that actually the market is driving the Fed. So you've seen interest rates coming down significantly since mid-late October.
Right.
Then the Fed basically reacted and came out in early December saying, okay, we're going to do more rate cuts next year, maybe earlier even. And it seems like Mr. Powell is actually just following what the market is dictating him. And the same thing was true when they aggressively started hiking rates, because at some point the market demanded higher interest rates due to these high inflation numbers that came out back then. So it's a little bit of a tricky thing. And of course, generally speaking, I'm totally against the fact that there is a small group of people behind closed doors deciding the price of money for the rest of the world. But that's a different topic. We could probably discuss about this the whole weekend.
I would agree with you.
Yes, but I think that the market right now, of course, the stock markets is rallying euphorically. Still continues. The year-end rally was massive. And after the three-week breather or little consolidation, it continues to rock higher currently. Probably there is now potential for disappointment already. That doesn't mean that markets will turn around tomorrow. It could still last a few weeks or maybe even until end of the quarter or maybe even until early May, like the usual seasonal pattern. But I think right now the market is expecting a little bit too much in terms of rate cuts already. And as we spoke about maybe renewed inflationary pressures, Powell might have a hard time cutting aggressively. And I think it will all depend on what the stock market actually is doing. And I mean, there is an important component because these bank term funding programs, they basically start ending in March and April. So most of these commercial banks that got into trouble due to the high interest rates had used that program to basically get liquidity. And that's going to be interesting how they manage to roll this over into a new vehicle or whatever they're going to use. That could create some stress already in March. But again, it's a very complex, tricky story that unless you really work in the Fed and know all the details, it's hard to actually really know what they're doing there. My perspective last year was that this was rather inflationary because they created new base money, which obviously helped the market, and then coupled with a very negative, pessimistic sentiment that was the fuel for this rally last year. And then, of course, you had this big topic, AI, and that was kind of like the driver. So you said it's an election year, so that generally is also my perspective. They most likely want to have a rather smooth ride throughout the year. But again, if we remember, 2008 was also an election year, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they will manage a smooth ride. What we have learned last year is that they can come out over one weekend and create $400 billion out of nowhere. So to assume that we're going to see another multi-month, 1-2 year long bear market is probably unlikely. I think the system is too instable, and I think they would rather very quickly turn around and pump up the markets basically with new money, with new printed currency. So, and I think that's then the point where gold will really start showing strength. So far, this attack from Hamas in early October was the start for a big rally in gold. And it basically went from $1,810 to $2,150 within 2 months. So that was a $340 rally within 2 months. That was a big run. And it happened very quickly. And of course, you would have thought that this new all-time high breakout above this resistance zone to 2075, where gold had been failing for 3 years in a row, would create basically more follow-up buying. But they managed a nice reversal on the day that gold made a new all-time high. And at the end of the day, it actually looked really ugly, the chart. And gold still has challenges to get back on its feet since then. So basically what we're seeing right now, gold is trying to build a base above $2,000. It's been going sideways between 2000 and 2080-ish the last few weeks. The dollar has recovered a little bit, so that's obviously making things a little bit more difficult for gold. And of course, a strong stock market also doesn't really give the need to invest into the safe haven of gold. But at the same time, we're still seeing strong physical demand out of Asia. You can see that basically most of the Asian sessions come up with a higher gold price. You can see that in Shanghai, the premiums are more or less between 3% and 4% every day. And I mean, it's nothing new. We know that the physical demand of gold is coming more than 50% of the physical demand is coming out of Asia. And you have obviously big problems in China at the moment. And I think that will probably also be the next driver, because they now realizing that they made some big policy errors, and they most likely will at some point very strongly stimulate the Chinese economy again. So this is something that is not in the hand of the Fed or the Americans or the Europeans. That's the Chinese kind of side of the things. And the Chinese people have learned that real estate is not safe. Actually, you can lose everything rather quickly. And since all these capital controls are in place and there's not much other things that they can invest in, gold is the go-to kind of like safe haven investment. And I think the physical demand is showing that. And I could very well imagine that this will be one of the drivers during this year when the Chinese start stimulating and printing new currency, that gold will not only sniff this out, but also will be driven by that. But of course, you also have a lot of geopolitical problems in the world. I mean, an attack on Iran or from Iran, escalation in Ukraine, you mentioned Taiwan. I mean, there's lots of hotspots, and this is all basically a proxy kind of war or a proxy situation for the real war that is going on between East and West, between China and America. And we have to see how this plays out. There's a lot of geopolitical pressure on both sides. The Chinese have been pushing forward, but rather smart and quietly. I think the Americans have been for a long time rather sleeping than actually understanding what's going on. And then they've been very harsh when Trump came into power. It looks like Trump might return end of the year, so that could also then intensify the whole geopolitical situation. But that's still too early to say, right? So gold is supported by the geopolitical situation, by generally speaking an inflationary mindset, and by most likely money printing by the Chinese and by at some point the Americans during this year as well.
Thank you for that. There is a lot there and a lot to digest. And I would agree with you just on about everything. It's interesting that you brought up China. It seems like they had a lot of deflationary pressure, and now it's switching to inflationary. I just was reading an article just the other day, I believe it was on Bloomberg, where they're going to overdrive with money printing to stimulate their economy. Let's talk really quick about gold stocks. There is an article you wrote, it was probably 2 months ago, about how the gold stocks, there's a lot of value there and they look great on the charts because of negative sentiment, which is actually positive, if you would, for the stocks. Comment about the stocks, the precious metal mining stocks now, which again, they're very cyclical. They can be, you can lose a lot of money on them and you can make a lot of money on them, but just from your perspective right now.
Yeah. Well, I think very important to understand that investing in gold mining stocks is a totally different kind of thing than in buying physical gold and silver, right? You have to bring a lot of time and patience with you. I think you would have to have at least 5 years, and you have to have a really good strategy, mainly in terms of averaging in, because this is a tiny, small sector. There is not a lot of liquidity in it. And you have these long multi-year periods where there's no new fresh liquidity coming into the sector. And then even though most of the producers are doing basically their thing and more or less come up with good numbers, or at least they are making money or they have good cash flow, it still doesn't mean that the stock price would go up, because it depends on so many things. And of course, the main driver is higher gold price, but we are seeing it right now. Gold is close to new all-time highs again, and the miners are far away from their 2011 highs. So they are not a good long-term investment. It's rather, you really have to have a good timing on the entry, especially. And you have to understand that they are very speculative. Of course, if you pick the right company and you have a good timing, you can make a 10-bagger easier than in other sectors, probably. But They are very cyclical. Generally speaking, it's rather a dirty business. It's an old-fashioned kind of business. I think that time will come. At some point, they will catch up violently to the gold price. But obviously, we are not there yet. I've been also a little bit disappointed. I thought that usually the seasonal component in January and February is rather very favorable for them. And so far, they have completely disappointed this year. Of course, gold had a bad start into the new year. It's been basically correcting since early December. So that was not helpful. A little bit stronger dollar is also not helpful. And then the party in the general stock market is also not helpful. But I think if you have a really good strategy in terms of averaging in, then they can be a great add-on into your portfolio. Generally speaking, I think it's easier if you want to play the whole commodity sector in terms of as a safe haven and you don't trust the stock market, then I think it's much easier to buy a big commodity producer like BHP Billiton or Rio Tinto, where you can also get nice dividends. While these smaller mining stocks, it's a lot of work to research them, to understand the projects, to really get an idea of the management and the track record of the management. And then again, you also need to be rather close to the mining scene in Canada, especially where there's a lot of stuff happening behind closed doors and you need to hear the talk of the town, basically. So I think it's a very challenging sector. It has been a very challenging sector. And I can also tell you that during the first bull market from 2001 and 2011 that I participated in the precious metals, the mining stocks most of the time disappointed. And then suddenly at some point they started to overshoot violently and were able to catch up with the gold price quickly. But most of the time you've been basically waiting and while being disappointed.
Yeah, totally. I think you're right. I think most people, the best thing to do is to buy big producers or even the ETF. I know the gold purists don't like that answer, but I really think that's the thing to do for most people. Comment real quick on the price of silver. It's been my experience, and as well as hearing from experts such as yourself, that gold typically leads and then silver catches up. Is that what's going on now in the silver market, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, silver doesn't have a life on its own at the moment. It's basically going sideways since 4 years, since we had this big spike after Corona, or after the Corona crash. It went from, I think, $13 to $30. And since then, it's digesting this big move. This too is very disappointing to many. The silver bucks, I call silver the schizophrenic diva. So usually you have crazy, weird moves, doesn't make sense. Most of the time it's lagging gold, not really having any life on its own. Always overshoots on the downside, sometimes overshoots on the upside. But in the final stage of a real bull market in precious metals, silver will show up and rock the party for a short period of time and then basically create that outperformance over the gold price, right? So I don't think we're there yet. Usually, I mean, the best example, of course, is again, the bull market from 2001 to 2011. Silver had been very volatile. And then in 2011, it started to run from $17 to $50 within 7 or 8 months. And that also was actually the signal that the whole precious metals bull market would come to an end when silver showed up. But of course, this bull run was significant and it was amazing. And silver is one of the very few commodities that is trading far below its 1980 high. So generally speaking, there is a lot of potential there. Personally, I only play it physically for the long term. I'm not a silver trader in the markets. I think it's too volatile and too erratic. But there will be at some point when you get kind of a setup where gold has been running ahead for quite a while and it's obvious and everybody's asking themselves, what's going on with silver? Why it's lagging so much? Then probably it's a good moment then also to consider the silver mining stocks, because that's where you can make the really big money, and the 10 dirty baggers even are possible.
Yeah, and it's been my experience is when everybody's talking about it, both precious metals, that's usually when you sell. Florian, I want to thank you so much for your time. You're very gracious. Can you please just give us where can people find you online and to find more about you?
Yeah, you can find me on my website, MidasTouch-consulting.com. There's also the link to our Telegram channel, which is a free group of mastermind investors from all over the world. We exchange ideas and charts and setups and latest news about precious metals, commodities, mining stocks, and also about Bitcoin and the digital assets. And you can find us on Telegram, Midas Touch Consulting.
Excellent. I will put a link to all of this in the show notes, both on the YouTube channel, the site, and on the podcast. Again, Florian, I want to thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Andy. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Absolutely.